All right. Hello, everyone. Thanks for joining the COP call today. My name is Sarah Berger with Green Coast Energy, and this call is brought to you by the members of the Relay Network. The Relay Network consists of six member organizations whose work spans across many states. On this map, you'll see the home base of the member organizations. So today's call is going to be purely discussion-based. I just want to pull up the slides. I'll give everyone a chance to read it. I don't want to read it to you, but this is kind of what we were thinking when we thought of this call. So I'm just going to leave it up here for a minute and let folks read through it, just so you see where the background of our discussion questions kind of came from. And then each slide's going to have a number of questions between like 3 and 7. We kind of wanted to give you guys the autonomy to decide what the most interesting questions were to you. So what I'll do is we're going to vote on what we're going to talk about first, and then I'll pull up that slide. And let's say you see the slide and discussion question number 3 is the most interesting. Go ahead and just shout it out or type it in the chat, and that's what we'll start talking about. We'll just get this started. Jackie, do you want to kind of provide some insight about what your biggest challenge from hiring or training new staff?
Yeah, sure. So funding is one of them. We implement utility programs and have recently in the last 2 years scaled up and hired more staff to support that. But a challenge is that programs that fund the work don't fund the training. So we've had to get creative and rely on existing staff to mentor or train new staff, as well as really ramp up our documentation of internal procedures so that we're not reinventing the wheel every time.
Does anyone else have kind of a different challenge when they're hiring new people? Or have any tips for Jackie?
This is Angelina. I guess I can continue just the kind of riffing off what Jackie said. I think a really big challenge is the timeline required for hiring and training. And I think that oftentimes when we are ramping up a program, we have a lot of time to like hire and train. And so I think it's a challenge to build that in, to plan for that, especially as Jackie said, when the funding doesn't necessarily cover the training. And then I think your question number 2 here is a bit of a challenge of how do you balance outside training with the training required to do the job? You know, I think there's a lot of content in trainings that are available like BPI, but then you still have to take the time to train folks on the job to our specific processes and programs.
What about in New Orleans? What are the challenges with hiring new staff for the folks in New Orleans?
I think we have kind of a job flow fluctuation. So we'll have a job that lasts a year or maybe 2 years, and then that funding source will disappear, and then it'll be gone for a year, and then a new one will come in and take its place. So I think trying to find a balance where we're not taxed on a smaller staff or not overstaffed has been kind of a challenge for us.
This is Deb Hall. Can you hear me this time?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'm talking through the good old telephone. At New Ecology, we have a structure where a lot of our jobs are managed by project managers, and then they work with the technical team, what we call our engineering and technical team. And when we bring on new people, we do systematically sit down with them and talk about the things that the other jobs that are going on that we could have them shadow, because we want people both to know how we do our work as well as the framework for doing it. Because in multifamily housing, where we're often not doing just utility programs, but we're also working on an interface with architects and engineers working on tax credit financed or publicly financed project rehabilitation, we have to also teach people the language of the whole business of affordable housing finance, just so that when they hear from folks about deadlines and they have to learn the utility programs and the deadlines for the utility programs that interface with the deadlines for the financing process. And that takes a while for people to absorb in different markets, particularly where New England's so compact. You know, we're working in Connecticut and Massachusetts, and you have to know the different programs. And then down in our Mid-Atlantic office, and they can speak to it, there's a different program in D.C., Maryland, Delaware, and now we're getting also into possibly Pennsylvania and New Jersey. So just keeping tabs on what people need to learn in that mix and how fast they need to learn it and how they can actually see it in the field is our big challenge, is getting it all balanced. As well as the outside training, as people were talking about, you know, like some of it is the certification training and things like that, but a lot of it is just the whole framework for doing work on multifamily housing.
Deb, to kind of follow up, you talked about how you guys have a lot of offices in a lot of different places. Is it easier to hire people in those different markets, like maybe in Massachusetts where y'all might have a bigger city to work from than in like Delaware, or does that not really affect it?
Pat, do you want to talk about the Mid-Atlantic situation? Because it is quite different in a Baltimore, Washington versus Wilmington, Delaware, which is only like a 50,000 person city.
Yeah, I mean, I think the short answer is yeah. The markets are pretty different. Delaware can easily be lost between Philadelphia and then the larger cities to the south. And the complexity of the green building programs that are in Baltimore and DC are very different than they are in Delaware. So it's like sometimes we're looking for people that can kind of work and operate in all those different markets, right? Like not only working on projects in Baltimore that may be doing LEED Gold with an overlay of the International Green, whatever it is, construction code, but then also in Delaware, where we're kind of trying to support the development of higher ambitions and performance targets, you know, people that are also coming at it from a more entrepreneurial perspective to try to enhance the practice more broadly. Yeah, there are some challenges.
Can I ask a question for Deborah?
Sure.
This is Jackie, hi. This is kind of mentioned in number 6. When you're bringing folks up to speed, say, on the language around tax credit projects or whatnot internally, what do you use? Is it an Excel sheet? Is it a system?
Yeah. Well, often the senior project manager or the engineering manager will have kind of a little written document that's just a game plan for that new person and what they maybe need to learn, and they work it out together. And it's not a template per se, but the things that we do with teaching people how to use templates is more like when we're writing contracts for some new work that someone wants us to do. We have gone to a system using this software called PandaDocs that makes it much easier to clone scopes of work based on the fact that we've now tried to standardize the work we do enough so we can create contracts not from scratch every time. So we have to teach people that kind of software. And the folks who do HERS rating or modeling and things all have to use different kinds of software for that. So it's not quite that we have templates, but we do have also redacted reports and things that people can get familiar with the style in which we write, the way we present data. We have standardized a lot of that, but we're always trying to do more standardization just to save time and make it easier for people to learn by doing it.
Okay. We've started using OneNote. We actually moved a lot of our files off of our hard drive and linked everything in OneNote so that it's maybe not a Word document or an Excel sheet, but it is easily navigated for someone new. That's one thing that we're trying now. The other thing I wanted to mention was, Stephanie mentioned just flexibility to sort of increase or decrease staff on projects. Right now we're partnering with the University of Illinois in Chicago. They have a graduate program of engineers and we use them in a way that's flexible. So if we have to ramp up on assessments, we're able to tap into we subcontract with them, and then we can decrease when the programs ramp down towards the end of the year. Another thing that is a new, something new we're trying to be more flexible.
Jackie, do you guys do that for something kind of that has a specific way of doing it, like an ASHRAE level on you, and that's how you can bring people in quickly and then push them out?
We've pulled out the very specific repetitive type tasks that are parts of our team's workload generally, but that can be easily trainable. And so they just take over like a portion of someone's workload or just do the assessment. And then we still have a project manager that's leading the owner relationship, for instance. We don't have to train them on everything. We just train them on the very specific tasks that are simple.
Has anyone else had either success or less than success with kind of bringing in outside people temporarily? Or is no one else really doing that?
Hi, this is Scott from Michigan Energy Options. We do quite a bit of outsourcing on the back end of our reports. We have a team of engineers in Maryland that they check all of our information and data and any specific calculations for the assessment and the ECMs, and they deliver those to us, and then we check them again and then submit it in the report.
Has there been any challenges with contracting an outside group, Scott?
No, it's actually been real smooth. It's the company that we work with, we use their software, their auditing software, and so they already have all the information, and they're able to grab it right from the cloud and ask any questions that they have about the audit itself. I have all my recommendations for the report. We have a template that's built through the software that they just, it dumps everything into the Word document, and they just touch any ECM calculations that they need to, and then we get it back. Because I'm basically the only auditor here at Michigan Energy Options, and I'm busy with implementing utility programs, home energy ratings through HERS, BPI audits, and also with the solar park. It's just, it can be overwhelming. So to have that in our toolbox, it's worked out really well for us.
This is Angelina. I was just going to say that's super interesting, Scott, to hear, because I think we've always taken the approach in some of our new markets of looking for an individual to contract with. And it's been really, really challenging just because it's hard to really their level of knowledge, but then also just if they don't understand our processes, we get a report back that has not always been on the level of quality that we expected. That's something that we experienced in Missouri when we were just starting out and didn't have anyone on the ground. So it's cool that you're actually using a company that's also tied in with your auditing software. That's a great idea.
Yeah, we have been fortunate. And the software itself, I've looked at several of them, and the software is really user-friendly. You can actually, you know, train some of your students from the University of Illinois or Illinois State, whichever one you said. I'm sorry, I don't remember exactly. And they could use that software. You could probably train them within a day to use it.
Okay. So I think we're just going to go on to the next question set, just because we're at halfway time. And if these questions don't speak to anyone, we'll just move on to the next one. And this one's similar because it's recruiting new staff. Leave it up for a minute, and then if no one wants to talk, I'll just go to the next one.
I'll touch on the first subject here. This is Scott again from Michigan Energy Options. We personally don't have an HR department. We've been really fortunate with our relationship with Michigan State University and the students that they have there in multiple different programs and disciplines, and we just get really lucky, I guess, bringing them in and plugging them into our programs and their knowledge, skill sets, and everything like that. It's just, I don't know if any other companies out there have that luxury, but we've been really fortunate.
Does anyone have any input on successes that they've had about where they post jobs? Like, if you're looking, are you posting them locally? Are you posting them on listservs, like IFAs?
I think New Ecologies, we've used Indeed.com. We've used Green Dream Jobs in the past. And then if it's depending on whether it's an engineering or project manager job, we might go to some of the other trade associations that have job listings, you know, like the green building groups or the energy engineers or whatever. And we put them on our website. So some, you know, they're always there.
All right. Well, we're just going to move on to the next question set since...
I actually want to ask about retaining staff, but I think this might come up again in other slides. I've just worked a lot on training new staff and had a team of about as large as maybe 8, as small as 1 or 2. And I know how much time it takes. It takes on average here about 2 months for people to interview, get hired and trained up to a point where we can let them off on their own, really, managing their own stuff. So I just know it's a big resource suck to train new folks and to lose good people. So I'm curious how folks are retaining staff. We try to, you know, make it a fun place to work and have a pretty casual like company culture, but is there anything folks are doing to retain staff that's innovative or new? If nothing, then I don't feel bad.
Right.
In New Ecology's annual review process, we always include a question about what are your professional development aspirations. And so we use that as a time, you know, to let people know we care about the skills that they're adding that benefit the company, but also the ones that they're personally interested in being supported in their growth. So I think people appreciate that because we have a pretty, you know, we care about putting a budget together for letting people, you know, do some professional development that sometimes doesn't always have the immediate return for the work that they're doing for us. So.
I think here at Michigan Energy Options, because our teams are so small, I mean, our entire company is the size of some of your guys' teams. So What we try to do is to let each other know that we appreciate what they're doing and how important their work is to the rest of us and the team.
Okay, so this one's a little bit different. It's about specifically using outside trainings. We give the example of certifications a lot, just because that's an easy one that comes to mind, but we don't want to limit anyone to that. One of the things that I noticed when going from the training to being in the field, personally, when I was learning how to do this, is that the training teaches you how to work the program and maybe some examples of compliance versus non-compliance, but they don't really prepare you for just going out there and doing a rating on a house, for example. So what are some techniques that people have kind of found successful for helping kind of finish that training to get your new staff or current staff into the new role? And if that question doesn't speak to anyone, does anyone want to talk about anything else on this slide involving using outside trainings?
Hey, Sarah, this is Jared. I'm still going through the process of earning HERS credentials. I used the EcoLogic for training and testing, and now I'm moving on to Liber for the provisional ratings, which worked out to be a good process for me. It was pretty time consuming, but I'll be getting it done within the next month and then be able to support our team with green building certifications. As far as mentoring, I haven't found any. I've been fortunate to be working with Joe, and he's one of the most knowledgeable people in the area as far as HVAC and BAS systems. So being able to work with him and shadow him and have him provide training on a daily basis has been really helpful for me. In addition, our utility is trying to roll out retro commissioning programs and thought it would be useful to have some retro commissioning credentials under my belt. So I went to University of Wisconsin in Madison for their qualified commissioning provider certification. And that's a really good program. And I'm actually going back for some more HVAC training as it applies to commissioning next month. The staff up there is great. And they do a really robust training. So I recommend looking into any trainings that they have that y'all are interested in.
What about using templates to kind of guide people in the field once they get to that point or something like that? Is that something that people have found success in? We'll just move on to the next slide. Training existing staff and kind of moving folks around as a way to kind of alleviate the ebb and flow of new programs and old programs. So is anyone currently training some of their existing staff to work on new programs?
Yeah, here at Michigan Energy Options, we have two new staff members that, but it's kind of on the fly. We have program managers that are sitting in the same room with them. So if they have any questions or any hiccups in the process, you know, they just go on mute. Because we run our own call center from here, and we do anything from energy optimization to the light bulbs and aerators and things like that to the appliance recycling in the state of Michigan. So it can be a pretty intense day sometimes, but they do a really good job with, and we have good staff members to help them along the way.
At Elevate, this happens kind of often where folks will transition to a new department or a new program. And I think I mentioned one note earlier, we do really try to keep everything in there so that people can toggle back and forth in different folders and screens to jump between training materials. And then we've recently asked new staff to contribute to documenting how the training process was for them. So we've had to do a lot of on-the-fly training, like he was just mentioning. And after that's happened, before having to do that again, we've had the newer staff talk about what their experience was like coming on board to that program and try to document what they learned on the fly so that just in preparation for if someone else is going to come down the line, it's helping us build up our training materials internally. They have it so fresh in their minds and they're a fresh set of eyes on it.
Well, and I think that's interesting because I think it kind of speaks to what Deb was talking about before with regular reviews of staff and asking them what their priorities are, where you're taking some company time that's not necessarily billable hours or anything, and you're reflecting and also engaging your staff just to see what their mindset is. You
know? Once a month, we also have lunch and learns where we either invite in sometimes these machinery, like equipment and materials distributors who will come and know that, you know, we're eager to learn about new kind of green building materials, or we invite, like the other day, they're now doing passive house incentives with the new utility program, and they just rolled them out. So someone came and talked us through how those are going to work. And I think people really enjoy those sessions because they can bring a bag lunch and they learn something at their lunch, and that kind of applies to their work, but it usually just broadly applies to their interest in, you know, sustainable buildings. So those lunch and learns have been a way that anybody who's interested in the organization, even if they're not working directly on something now, can come and learn about new building materials or healthy assessments that are being done or green materials, all sorts of topics we've done in the past years.
And those are optional?
Yep, they are.
But you still get decent turnout?
Yes, we do. Mm-hmm.
Interesting. I like the idea about using products because I think, though we don't necessarily want to be beholden to a product in this field, there's always new products and there's always new methods of doing something. So it kind of helps keep it interesting. Mm-hmm. And then for the lunch and learns, do staff ever volunteer to do them, or is it mostly outside folk?
Yes, occasionally staff have done them if they've just finished a project where they really learned about a certain new kind of insulation or some other materials to deal with water, moisture, or whatever, they'll do a session as well.
Interesting.
But we've got like 35 people here, you know, plus we can add people by Skype for those.
So I guess we did have a slide for retaining staff, but we also kind of touched on that earlier and didn't get a lot of response. So I think I'd like to do to finish up the last 15 minutes of the call is I wanted to hear from you guys. These calls are optional. And so what made you sign on? Like, is there a question that you had, or is there something that's really like tripping you up, or is there interested in joining a roundtable discussion? So especially from folks we haven't heard from yet, I'm going to stop talking to leave some space. And I would love if people could just tell us why they joined.
Sir, this is Jared. I do like the roundtable discussion, but essentially I know I have a lot to learn, and I was interested in hearing what other programs are doing as far as training. And you hit it on the head earlier with, you know, being able to provide training, but also keep up billable hours. And that's something that I've had a challenge with.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Sarah. So I guess I'll jump in here. Kind of mentioned this at the beginning. The main reason I'm on the call is because I'm going to be presenting next week. So I guess I'll ask if anybody has questions that they're eager to learn about Floridor testing in multifamily buildings. Because I'm a little unsure about where to start and how far to down the rabbit hole we want to go with that.
Yeah, I think I'm curious to know, like, how many techs are you going to need on site when you're doing a multifamily building? Because I know a lot of times you have to have several blower doors going to help balance out the exterior units of the one that you're actually doing the testing on. So I would like some more information on that, if you don't mind.
Yeah, no problem.
Jake, one of the things that we've had a couple of issues with is making sure that we have the correct manometer inputs on our tests. And sometimes you can kind of see it if you've been doing the testing for a while, where you see a results off and you double check all your inputs. But sometimes we don't catch them until we're going through the site visit photos. So just any tips on kind of quality control, either for yourself or if maybe you have two people on site and are double checking each other.
Yeah, we run into that as well. For me, I'm kind of where what you mentioned, I've just been doing it enough where I just catch it right away, just looking at the number. I'm really only familiar with the Energy Conservatory stuff. The new DG1000 kind of has a feature that kind of walks you through the setup, tells you what hose to connect where, you know, what settings, and it kind of makes it a little bit more foolproof, but I mean, there's always a chance for user error. So, and then anytime you're using like an automated software, it'll give you warnings like the fan pressure is too low for, you know, the ring that you have selected kind of thing. So, but yeah, I don't know how to completely eliminate the chance for human error there.
Yeah, it's a tricky one, but the technology is a good idea.
I guess for next week, my coworker Tony is going to be presenting with me. I think we're just going to start from the beginning, probably have enough slides to take it as far as we want. And then if there's a lot of questions, we'll just answer them as we go, I think is be the best approach.
Well, I think that's a great transition to plug our next call, unless anyone else has anything they want to touch on with training. Our next call, September 19th, on blower door tests and multifamily properties with Jake and Tony. So please join us for that. You'll see an invite come through around the first week of September. So please register and join that call.
Can I just ask one more question on training? I think, Sarah, you are interested in knowing what folks might think is useful from Relay if they're is an opportunity to share resources or a board people can post what sources they're using or what approaches they're taking. Does anyone else feel like they need that? If not, we don't waste the time, but if it is useful, if anyone else feels that that would be useful, speak up.
Yeah, thanks, Jackie, for reminding me. One of the goals of the Relay Network is to kind of help share knowledge and bridge gaps in training and education in our field. So we would really love to hear feedback about what gaps you think there are and how you think the network might be able to help through those. If you have any ideas, you could speak now or feel free to shoot me an email.
Thanks for organizing.
Thanks everyone for joining. We'll be sending a survey around. I believe it's coming from SurveyMonkey. We read each survey and we have been trying to implement those recommendations. So we really appreciate y'all's feedback. If you have any questions, comments, insights, or anything else, feel free to reach out to me and Katrina. And thank you, Jackie, for being a panelist. I really appreciate it. And thank you all for joining. Have a good day.
Well, thanks, everyone.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.